This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Susan Franzen. Today's show is dedicated to those who came to Iowa and through their lives, following their passions, have transformed it in many different ways. We'll start with a memorial to Carol Horowitz, known to many KHOI listeners for her weekly programs, Broadway musicals, and more, which she co-hosted with Roger Berger, and KHOI Previews the Arts. Carol covered the art scene, not just in Ames, but also in Des Moines, and her guests always came in person, no pre-recorded interviews. And her dedicated engineer and assistant was Cynthia McClure. We have one of her frequent guests, the president of actors, Stan Raby, who is the producer of the current production that is dedicated to Carol. Stan.
The name of the show is Double Wide Texas. It was written by some of the people that wrote the old Golden Girls show. And when they stopped doing Golden Girls, they started writing plays, and this is one of them. So it's got a Golden Girl kind of humor to it. It's very fast-paced and very funny, and it's all about a trailer park outside of a small town called Tupelo, Texas. And Tupelo is making advances to annex the trailer park, and the intention is that they're going to turn it into a state penal institution. And so the people of the trailer park start putting together plans and organizing on how to stop the annexation. And in the meantime, you've got one of the characters auditioning to be in mattress commercials. And we've got someone else getting ready to be in a drag queen contest. And one of them is just ready to have a baby. And one of them is planning on moving to Houston to work for a cut-rate cruise ship company. All those kinds of things are going on. So there's something funny to laugh at. And this cast has had a ball with it. So the term Double Wide Texas refers to the fact that it is a trailer park comedy, and they have fun with everything trailer park and everything Texas.
So you've mentioned that the playwrights are pretty well known. What about the actors?
Okay. So first I want to start with the director of the show. The director of the show is Steve Petska. For those of us who have been around Ames a lot of years and remember MERST, during the summers in the maintenance shop at the Memorial Union, Steve was one of the founding and ongoing members, and he has moved back to Ames, and he's directing Double Wide, which is just perfect because Steve understands and can make comedy happen, and he gets the timing, and he's an extremely funny person, and he's able to communicate it to the actors and actresses. So that works out great. So Steve was a MERST person. So is, or was, Susan Norris. Susan Norris plays the role of Caprice. Caprice is the leading lady of Double Wide, and she is the person that's auditioning to be in mattress commercials. So she comes out in all kinds of outfits auditioning to be in mattress commercials. She's been around theater now for probably 45 years or more because she was also part of the Union Board Theater MERST SOV crowd at that time. She and Steve have been friends for like forever. Then right alongside Susan Norris is Jen Peter. And Jen is a wonderful comedic actress. She's got great comedic timing. She's got a great sound. Her first show with us was Shrek, And she did the other show that was written by these same playwrights, Savannah Sipping Society. So she gets their humor and their timing. Works out beautifully. Opposite Jen is Nicole Galliard. Well, Nicole Galliard plays Jovita Crumpler, who is Caprice's daughter. And Jovita is the person who's looking for a new job in cut-rate cruises. Nicole has been doing theater for many years with Story City and Judge Story Theatrical Troupe. And she's now come down and done a few shows with us. And she's wonderful, great. We enjoy her a lot. And then the four ladies are rounded out by Sue Osher. And Sue and her husband just moved here from Illinois. They were active in their Illinois community theater. So we're thrilled to have them here in and at Actors. And she plays Georgia Dean Rudd. And as you'll see, Georgia Dean's signature color is pink. And so you'll have to come and see the show, because the show is set in her trailer. And her trailer is a wonderful collection of outlandish collections, all in pink. We have Larkin Barkin, who is played by Jolene Gensler. And Jolene is an incredibly talented and experienced young actress. She and her husband have a small theater group for children down in Altoona, and she drives up to do the show. And she's amazing. She's so good. You'll enjoy her a lot. And then the last female in the cast, last lady in the cast, is Rachel Garlock. Rachel plays the part of Starla Pudney. She's the first woman, or the first lady, of Tougalo. And she's underhanded and absolutely delightful. For those who saw The Full Monty, that was Rachel's first show with us, and she's done several since then. So she's been a regular with us, and she has great experience. The men are led by Brian Parrish. People who have been around Ames know Brian, and it's great to have him back on stage. He's been away for a while, and so it's great to have him back. And he plays a cantankerous old man who turns to jelly. He's great. Then we have Patrick Detterman, who plays Lomax Tanner. Lomax is slimy. Patrick grew his hair so he could do the whole slimy look so much better, and he's having a ball with it. I first worked with Patrick for a show called The 39 Steps, and he was the male lead in 39 Steps. He was fabulous. And he's just come off directing Murder on the Orient Express. So you can see we have a lot of experience in the cast. But we have one new person, and that's Jimmy Sylvester. And Jimmy's playing the role of Baby, the young man who's getting ready to be in a drag show. And he is hysterically funny. So the audience will absolutely love them. You know, and the other thing that's nice about this show is we have an incredibly experienced backstage cast, because Lynn Lloyd did our costumes for us. Tom Haggis, who did the sound, and he's an amazing sound guy. And Zach Heilman did the lights, and Marla Miller was our props person. So we had an amazing backstage crew as well. So this show has gone together beautiful. The audience will love it.
Well, my only concern, and I hear you describing all these fun people, is we haven't been to a performance of anything for 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And so do you have any accommodations for people who are still shy of COVID?
Yeah, you know, we were so fortunate because, it's almost 2 years ago now, we got a grant from the Story County Community Foundation to buy the equipment necessary to be able to stream our performances. And not every leasing company allows you to stream every show. But we can stream this one. So this can be streamed from home. You can get a streaming ticket and watch it at home on your own computer, or if you have a smart TV, watch it on your smart TV, and you can pop your popcorn and enjoy it and never have to worry about being exposed to anyone else. And you know, there are a lot of things going around because it's still winter. So that's a wonderful alternative. And to get streaming tickets, it's easy. You go to the actor's website, and you have to buy them on the website because that's how you get your streaming connection and your. So you must buy the ticket online, and you'll go to the actor's website. On the action toolbar across the top, it says tickets. You move to that, and one of the options underneath it on the drop down are buy streaming tickets. You click on buy streaming tickets, and that takes you directly to the website for Broadway On Demand. And they are the streaming provider for this show. And you'll select the show that you want to watch, which performance you want to watch. And then on the next screen, they'll ask you for identifying information so that they can send you the link for the show, and then they'll ask for payment information. And so it's very easy to do. And I have to reiterate, because it has come up a few times, can I get the streaming tickets for them? And I cannot. You have to get the streaming tickets on your own. This company is wonderful, too, because if you have any kind of issues along the way, they provide you with a help desk number, and they're there to help you immediately if anything goes wrong. So we're excited. This is the first time we've used Broadway On Demand, but they have they've been outstanding to work with.
Well, I have another question, and that is there any limit to the streaming tickets for any particular performance? For example, I can't make up my mind between two dates. Do I have to be sure I get my streaming tickets as soon as possible, or can I wait?
You can wait. You can. In fact, we were talking last night. We expect a lot of the people who are going to stream the show will probably wait until 30 minutes or an hour before the show to get their streaming tickets, because that way they don't have to worry, because you can't exchange them. And since you can't exchange them, you don't want to accidentally get them for the wrong time. So the streaming is unlimited in terms of the number of tickets that we can sell for it.
Well, of course, it's always more exciting to see a live show, but the other thing that we'll miss out on is your new lobby.
You know, the addition to the Actors Building has been a wonderful thing for us. First of all, I have to say we've got amazing community support on putting this up. And the feedback that we get from people as they're coming to see the show has been incredible. For anyone who came to see a show in our building before the audition, it's a huge difference. It is a much more pleasant and welcoming space, and it's extremely comfortable. And we're now looking for different ways to use that space. We had a play in the lobby last weekend, and before that we did improv classes in the lobby, and coming up we've got dance classes, we're calling them beginning Broadway dance classes. So if you ever want to do a musical and you have to do a ball change, you know what the step is. And so that'll be great fun. And we're looking for various ways of using this space. So we're always looking for ideas and suggestions, because now that we have the space, we want to make full use of it.
Well, I can't think of a better way to honor Carol Horowitz on her birthday
Now, what are the dates of the show?
Okay, so we open March 31st, and we have opening night appetizers provided by Texas Roadhouse. They said it was so appropriate to do opening night appetizers for Double Wide Texas, since they're Texas Roadhouse. Then we have a performance on Carol's birthday, which is April the 1st, and one on April the 2nd. All the evening performances that weekend are at 7:30. Then the next weekend, we have a show on Friday and Saturday nights. That's the 8th and 9th at 7:30. And we have a Sunday matinee on April the 10th.
Well, that's a lot of productions and a lot of chances to see it.
You know, and it's nice that with the new technology of streaming, you know, we only seat 136. We have a very intimate theater. So if you are coming into the theater, you don't have to worry about a bad seat because it's so close. It's intimate. So if you want to see the show and the show, you can't get tickets or you can't find two tickets together, you can buy a streaming ticket and still not miss the production at all. And I tell you what's been so nice about this show is we're having people getting streaming tickets from out of state. People who otherwise wouldn't get to see the show are dialing in and getting tickets. They're logging in rather and getting tickets. So that's an ideal situation.
And it sounds like a really, really great show. And I'm so glad that we could have you with us to do our best to introduce a show from actors, even though we no longer have KHOI Previews the Arts.
Well, thank you. And I know Carol, you know, we're honoring Carol with this because she was such an important part of actors. She was the person who saw to it that the original building went up, and she's been with us during my entire exposure and working with actors. So this is a great way of being able to recognize one of the people who have kept actors and the arts and theater going in Ames.
Well, thank you so much. And I guess you don't tell the producer to break a leg, right?
That's right. I don't know.
In case you just tuned in, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've just heard from Stan Ravey, the producer of Double Wide Texas, the comedy that is opening at Actors this Thursday, March 31st. In case you just tuned in, this is KHOI Local Talk, and I'm your host for this hour. We've just been talking with Stan Ravey, the producer of Texas Double Wide, the comedy just opening at Actors tomorrow, March 31st, honoring Carol Horowitz. Carol was one of these people who, when she found herself in an uncomfortable new place, and that's what Ames was to her when she came here from New York, she tries to make it better, tries to make it better for everyone who lives here, and to share something that she felt that the people in Ames needed. We saw this in children's theater and in the many things that you heard about that she did for Actors. And, of course, for KHOI, where she had two weekly shows. One was Broadway Musicals and More, which she co-hosted on Saturday with Roger Berger. And the other was KHOI Previews the Arts. Our next guest came from even farther away than New York City, and he has his own idea of how he wants to be part of Ames. He is Lou Lee, the owner of Wasabi Restaurant.
So my name is Lou, and I was originally from China, and I moved here. I moved to Ames into January 2008. So half of my life was in here, Ames. So this is my second hometown. And I met with my wife here, and I have two sons. They're all born in Mary Greeley Hospital. So yeah, that's about me.
Well, why did you come to Ames?
Oh, because I come from a 7 million population city, and I really want to have the small town lifestyle. And where I was born is where there's not a lot of snow, so I want to move to somewhere that I can see snow in the winter. So that's why I come to Ames.
What did you study when you came to Ames?
Also, I have a mechanical engineering degree from Iowa State University.
And did you ever work as a mechanical engineer?
Yes, I did. I did work at an engineering firm in Des Moines. And me and my family want to start our own business.
Why did you decide to have an Asian restaurant on South 16th?
Our family, we all love food, and we want to start our own business. So we're trying to figure out what we're going to do. And I had several years restaurant experience. So we just started a restaurant.
Why here?
Here in Ames? Yeah, because we love in Ames. This is my second hometown.
But why on South 16th? I passed this many times, and I couldn't believe it was really open. I saw open sign, open light, and it's Wasabi, and I thought, well, that has something to do with food, but is there really a restaurant there?
We pick up this location. We think this is a very, very good location for a restaurant. So we got Dublin Bay over there. We got a lot of hotels around us. We're the closest restaurant to the stadium. Also, we have the Provision on that side. We have the business park around this area. So, and we have a lot of students living right here, or MedMed next to us. I think this is a great location for a restaurant.
Well, how did you find out about the restaurant?
We built it. We built this restaurant from scratch.
I thought you worked for Grandpa Noodle.
Yeah, we built a Grandpa Noodle, and then we turned it into Wasabi. So we built the entire building, and then everything was, we built it.
So you had your staff all trained at Grandpa Noodle, and then they started to work at Wasabi, is that right?
Yeah, most of them are the same, same people. So they like work with me, so we all work together for many years, so and we like each other, so they stay with me.
I would think the most difficult thing about this kind of restaurant, it's really a sushi restaurant, is that you call it an Asian restaurant, and you do have all kinds of food. You have orange chicken and things like that. You have fried things in from the kitchen. But your sushi and sashimi are the real stars. And I know that it must be very difficult to keep that, have the fresh fish when you need it,
and you have to eat it up right away because it's not something that stays around. In fact, you told me you don't cook it in anything. If you don't eat it raw, you get rid of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that I think that's the key success point of wasabi. First, we have a very, very good menu design. We run everything pretty fast. And also, we are the biggest sushi-grade fish buyer in entire Iowa. So we always get to choose the best fish that we can get. And then we have very stable relationship with our vendors. So we trust each other, so they always send us very nice fish. We help fish deliver here 3 times a week, so that keep us very safe. Most of the fish only stay here for a couple of days, then they're sold out. We really had an issue that the fish was bad. And we have to throw it away. It's rarely happened to us. And we're trying to keep the fish as fresh as possible. But usually it's sold out in a couple of days. So it doesn't have that issue for us.
Well, I noticed from your website and so forth that there are several wasabis in Des Moines. How did you get hooked up with them?
Oh, yeah. I met the founder of Wasabi several years ago. We become, so we talked several times. I think he had very good concept. So we talked. And we like each other, so we decided to turn our restaurant to Wasabi. So the Wasabi group have a group of very talented people, and great management team. So I think the concept they're running is all very successful throughout the entire. All the stores that we open, they're all very successful, and I think the major thing was the management.
And does the management deal with the sourcing? Because I mean, obviously, this is not locally sourced. You don't serve any local fish. Where do you get your fish?
Yeah, that's a part of the management, wasabi management team job. They trying to source anything they can. A lot of our fish is from Japan, from Norway, from Canada, from Mexico. So we trying to find the best quality fish we can find and ship to here. So yeah, it's from all over the world.
And for that, is it an advantage to be a big company?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Because the buying power is everything. If you have a bigger buying power, you can always reach different level of stuff. So we still trying to expand, and we are going to have another wasabi restaurant in Ames opening hopefully end of this year. It'll be on Somerset area, pretty close to the cafe. We already bought the building, so we're already start working on it.
What are some of the other things besides snow and the size of the town that you like about Ames and Central Iowa?
Oh, that's my favorite thing is the people here. Because that thing, I didn't know anything about people here before I moved here, but after I moved here, I fall in love with the people here in town. It's all the people here are very nice, and so that's 14 years here, and a lot of local Iowans give me a lot of help with everything, how to run a restaurant, how to get funded. Yeah, just great people trying to help me. They don't ask for anything. They're willing to help. So I think people are very nice here and feel like home.
Well, it is home.
Yes, yes, yes. It is home.
Have your parents ever visited you here?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. They came here to visit their grandchildren. Yeah. And my wife's parents actually live here.
Do they live here in like in Des Moines or?
They live in Boone. They live in Boone. So.
So this is really a Central Iowa success story, by way of China.
Yeah, it's my hometown now, Ames. Also, I'm a big Cyclone fan and go to every football game.
Now going to Webster City to visit with Kathy Vaughn, Executive Director of All Cultures Equal in Webster City, which is a very interesting organization. It got started when Governor Robert Ray was inviting people from particularly the Laotians displaced by the Vietnam War to Iowa. And many of them settled in Webster City, and the support of that community is something that Iowa can be very proud of, and as you can see, it's developed into ways to support others in the community.
How did All Cultures Equal get started?
All Cultures Equal was in response to the large number of Laotian and Thai refugees in this city. They needed a place to meet, so the Laotians worked with the city and the group that formed All Cultures Equal, and they bought this building. It has a huge hall, so they could meet here for celebrations and weddings and meetings of that kind. So at the beginning, it was really centered around Laotian and Thai people. As time went on, those people became integrated, felt very comfortable in the community. So then it switched a little bit to the Hispanic population because we were getting a lot more Latino people here in Webster City. So then they began doing some immigration work. We have an immigration advocate that can work with renewal of green cards. She does citizenship. She also does a lot of translating for people. A lot of the older Laotians don't speak English clearly, so they'll come to Chin, and she will translate them for them, for instance, for Social Security or doctor's offices and things like that. Iowa Central came in, and they had English classes for quite some time. They pulled out, but we still teach English and Spanish, and we teach them together so that they can practice with native speakers. And it brings them together so that they can find out a little bit more about each other. It's really fun. We just started a session about a month ago. So now our focus really is more on the Latino population, languages. We have a youth program in the summer, which has been going on for quite some time. Started out working in the garden, and now they're kind of branching out. We're doing some woodworking. We're learning about butterflies and prairies. In fact, this year, they will be making bird feeders to sell, so we can talk a little bit about what it takes to run a business. So that's a pretty big summer program. We also have a new commercial kitchen, so if someone wants to have a restaurant, they can try it out here first. They can rent it for an evening, they can rent it for a week, whatever they wish. It's a licensed kitchen, so anything that they make in our kitchen can be sold. So our whole focus in the last 5 years has really switched from aiding Latino people to more of a community focus. We do still help a lot of Latino people. They come in here for help with forms and to print out forms because many of them just have a phone. So they need to print out forms when they come in. And we also did more things with the children. So last year they had a POM clinic, and 18 kids came, little girls came to learn a POM dance with the Eagle Grove dance team and Tammy Heilick from here in town. So we've kind of moved out to focus on the children and on language. We have base exercise here, and that's been here for a long time. That's run by RSVP, so they do exercises twice a week. We now have a free yoga program, which is sponsored by AmeriGroup, and they provided money to hire a yoga teacher for an entire year. So we have free yoga classes. We also have all the equipment, so no one has to bring anything. In fact, soon we will be streaming that on our webpage. So that's kind of exciting. So over the years, it's really had to adjust to the changing, the climate and the concentration diversity in the city. So where it first started out as Laotian-centered, now it's more a community center. So it's changed a lot.
Well, I have a sort of a historic question, because when I first came, it was probably 2004 or 5. And at that time, there was a very strong connection with a church that had helped. I think it was a Methodist church. Are these people still involved?
Asbury Methodist Church is still involved with us. They help sponsor our food pantry that we have twice a month. So we have lots of volunteers from there.
And also, when I was here, I saw some gardens that I had the impression that there was a trailer camp or something right next to your location that was where a lot of the Lao immigrants lived.
Mm-hmm. There is a mobile home park just down the street from us.
And that when I first came to Webster City, it had nothing to do with immigration. It had to do with your movie theater, because when they tried to close, or they were going to close the movie theater, as they were in lots of towns because of the change to digital films and the theaters couldn't continue. The people of Webster City collected the money and bought the old theater and fixed it up so it was really nice. I think they even had ushers, which is really pretty over the top for a movie theater, but it was, and I was interested in that. And while I was in Webster City, I got a tour. And at that time, I interviewed Janet Turing.
Yes.
And so I heard a little about the origins of the of All Cultures Equal, and then I remember coming and taking some pictures of the gardens, and I thought these gardens were particularly for the Lao people, of course, who, you know, have different vegetables and were growing vegetables. Was that true then? Is it still true?
That has changed. We're having some difficulty getting volunteers and people to come and help with our community garden. Our raised beds kind of fell apart. They've been in here so many years. So we took out our raised beds, and we had a guy come in and till. And so now we have a large garden, and we have an irrigation system for it that was donated. So it's changed in that respect. most of the Laotians or the people from the mobile home park do not come over anymore to help with that. So our gardens are kind of in flux. We're not quite sure what's going to, how that's going to change in the next couple of years.
Well, it sounds like you have lots of resources and lots of ideas. For example, the commercial kitchen, I think, is pretty unusual and very useful, because I've heard from people who wanted to start kitchens or be catering out of their homes that they couldn't do it because of the requirements. The other thing that I noticed when I came back several years later, speaking of the Hispanic population, was how many of the Main Street businesses, like the sporting goods store, were Hispanic. And the sporting goods store especially impressed me, because it wasn't so much that the clerks spoke Spanish. What really impressed me was the things like the color of the tennis shoes. Everything was so much more colorful.
And, yes.
And it wasn't the same.
One of them is the Latino population here in town, buying here in town. A lot of employees on Main Street that are Hispanic. That's really exciting. You know, we have 4 Mexican restaurants now. So that's expanding too. And, you know, kids don't like wearing white and black and gray tennis shoes anymore. Now we have to have purple and orange and pink. So lots of things are changing.
Well, maybe Webster City was just ahead of the curve.
Maybe we were.
And also when I was visiting Webster City, I got to hear about legacy learning. Do you some things?
We have in the past. COVID the last couple of years has kind of messed everything up. Usually hold at least 3 international cooking classes in a year. So we've taught German cooking and Norwegian cooking and Italian cooking, and those are usually advertised and partnered with Legacy Learning. They're very good about doing that with us, so we can get our cooking classes out. And they're very popular, and they're really fun. I mean, they're just a small group, 8 to 10 people.
Well, one of the things that I also learned when the movie theater closed was the reason the movie theater was closing was because you'd lost 2 big industries, Electrolux and Frigidaire. So these are big, big industries. And that originally the Laotians were very desirable employees because they were used to working with small things. So they could do this, the kind of work that was required to put in the boards and whatever they put into refrigerators and vacuum cleaners. And those things were moved out, I suppose, to Mexico. Wherever they were moved to, you didn't have them anymore. And so there was a big exodus of workers. But the Laotians, for example, that was their community. That was their home. And so I don't know how they adapted in terms of employment, but they didn't leave Webster City.
No, we have lots of families where the adults work in Fort Dodge, especially, and some in Ames. But, you know, some of the businesses here grew, too. Van Deest grew, Custom Meats grew, Marianne's grew. We had some new companies come in. And then over by Eagle Grove, Prestige came in. Daybreak Eggs came in. So we've had lots of businesses that have come in or grown in the last 5 to 10 years. So that made a difference, too.
What do you see as the future for Culture Sequel?
Well, we figure that out every year. I suspect that we will continue as we are. You know, we really have 4 different areas of that we work on. We have the kitchen and the culture. So we have we try to have the Salsa Fest. This year we're going to have some international students come in and talk about their home countries, so we can do some work with learning about new cultures. We try to include or increase our youth and children programs, especially in the summertime, because there are a lot of kids that don't have parents at home. You know, they get bored. One of the good things about our program is that we pay for hayrides to come, and anybody in town will pick them up, and we pay for that transportation. So that helps immensely. We also have people that will train for literacy and for citizenship. I think that will increase as we go along, especially the citizenship. And that whole fitness thing, I expect for us to become more culture-oriented, not a specific culture, but many cultures. I think that's one of the things that when I talk to the people in the community, that's something that they want, something that they're interested in. We've talked to some restaurants to come in and do a one-night thing with some different kinds of food. I hear about that all the time, people waiting for that to come in. I know we have some Thai and Laotian people coming in and a Hispanic family coming in, and we're working on getting some other ones. So I think that we'll just keep moving toward the cultural aspect. You know, we have a food pantry. We have the immigration person. You know, we do a lot of essential skills. Proteus comes once a month. Proteus provides free medical care for anyone who does not speak English or does not have insurance or works in the agricultural business. So they come in once a month and they have their clinic here. And I think that, you know, that's a plus for us too, between food pantry and Proteus and our citizenship. You know, we're providing a lot of essential services to people that really need it.
Well, it sounds like it's something that a lot of communities need but don't have.
Yeah, I agree. The hardest thing that we have is to get the word out about what we're doing. I think that people still have the idea in their head that we are just for Hispanic immigrants and that we don't do anything else, and we're working on that, getting the word out that, you know, that is not what specifically what we're doing. In fact, in October and November, we have a Swedish meatball dinner with an international dessert buffet.
So the original immigrants in this area, the Swedes.
Yeah, we had a Norwegian cooking class, and we made kumla. And I'm Norwegian background, and I've never heard of kumla. But we made kumla and dessert waffles and cucumber salad. And I'm thinking mashed potatoes. So very traditional Scandinavian dinner. So we're trying to branch out here, trying to get lots of cultures involved.
And do you have any kind of a festival? Like, of course, Story City has Scandinavian Days, and I'm not sure if other towns have anything to celebrate their historic roots.
That is one thing that we've been working on. I'm not sure how that will work this year. You know, COVID sticks a lot of sticks in the cog here. We've talked about doing that. We've talked about having a Christmas festival like they used to do here. They used to have a festival of trees. We've talked about having some different culture music come in so we could be outside or inside and have something like that. That's one of the things that we're working on, and hopefully we'll get there. Right now, I guess most of our energy is focused on this new English and Spanish class. I am not a very technological person, so it has been a challenge. We have in-classroom, and then we have a Zoom class, And then we record that, and all of our classes are online and our worksheets for people to go if they miss a class. So it's become a very involved process.
Yes, it's very interesting how COVID has changed the way we communicate.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one of the issues here, too, is because we have so many different pork producers and chicken producers, they have to be careful so that they don't get germs from one farm to go to another farm. Security. Biosecurity has become a big thing. So one of the companies that works with us, they do all theirs online because they don't want to pick up any diseases for their farms.
Now, this is interesting difference between many states and cities and the mm-hmm. concerns that they have and what we have here in Iowa, where you have to, there in the Register there was an article about six new cases of bird flu. And,
right.
Of course, there was also an article about the new California law about having more space for birthing pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Hogs, and, of course, Iowa didn't have those laws, so the adaptation will be huge. And
right.
Actually, some of these battles were being fought in Iowa between one farm group and another, and now they've got national and even international ramifications, I guess.
Yes, that's one thing that's unique about Iowa and the Midwest, is that because we have so many agricultural businesses, that is one thing that we have to be careful of. I did not think about biosecurity when we first started, but luckily they did. So that's one of the reasons that we're on Zoom, so that there people can do it from home and not have to come into the classroom. Because we have people right now with Hanover Farms that are over by Sioux City that come into our Zoom meetings. So this has made it available to way more people.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, places, and events in Central Iowa. I've been your host for today, Susan Franzen. At noon, you can hear a rebroadcast of Capital Week, originally broadcast on Monday at 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At the top of the hour. Morning Masterpieces will follow at 9 a.m. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878. That's 515-292-2878. Or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you want to become a member or renew your membership today. Just hit the yellow Donate, Become a Member button. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI meaningful and possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.